This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by American Crawl Space and Pest Services. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. It's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending in Trumplandia?
So a lot of folks have been noticing a new talking point that the Democrats are sticking to pretty religiously. Every once in a while, you get someone veering off of the conversation, but the talking point has to do with the release of these court filings on Michael Cohen by the Mueller team. And it showed him responsible for payments to Stormy Daniels. It showed him responsible for potential violations to the point where Mueller, despite Michael Cohen actually agreeing to cooperate, the Mueller team is saying, we recommend really, really high punishment for him. We want him to see substantial jail time. And there's this belief that one of the people who are unnamed, who is unnamed in the filings, person number one, is actually President Trump or then candidate Donald Trump. And so now Democrats are going out of their way to say something very specific. Not that he might be guilty of something, not that there's the collusion conversation has kind of been pushed aside momentarily. This is all now Donald Trump. He's going to jail. He's going to be going to jail. The second that he's out of office, he's going to be indicted and he's going to go to jail. And you saw a course of this over the last 24 to 48 hours. Here just last night was Senator Chris Coons, the Democrat from Delaware, with Wolf Blitzer.
Do you agree with Congressman Adam Schiff, who's going to be the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, that President Trump could be indicted and possibly face jail time after he leaves office?
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that. Why?
Well, the charges, the issues outlined against both Michael Cohen and Paul Manafort, I think, continue to sharpen the ways in which it's clear that the Mueller investigation has produced a whole series of actions not previously exposed to the public.
It's almost word for word the same what others are saying. And the question is, of course, why are they doing this? Because generally speaking, when you're talking about impeachment, even if you disagree with the president's position on anything, even if you're not a member of the same party, you tend to get queasy about that because you know what that kind of thing does to the country. So Brian Kilmeade was on The Five on Fox News yesterday. He had this to say.
Whether you are all for Donald Trump or against Donald Trump, by the way the indictment was written, according to legal experts, with the flowery language instead of the dry legalistic approach, it looks as though they're going after Trump. There's no doubt about it. So whether you think they should or shouldn't, let's just put that aside for a second. They are going after Trump to try to say that he directed Michael Cohen, because he already said it during Michael Cohen's sentencing, they directed Michael Cohen to make the payments. So Trump's got to think of not whether it's right or wrong or comparing to Hillary Clinton or not. It doesn't matter. The Southern District of New York is trying to take him down. Now, the question is, what exactly did he deceive the American people on and get to his office falsely? Did anyone actually think that Donald Trump was the second coming of some high-level pope? No, they knew his background. They knew what was going on.
Which is why I don't quite understand the position Democrats are taking here, where you kind of knew what President Trump was going to be as president. You kind of knew his character, and people still overwhelmingly voted to put him in office. Now, I think they were trying to make a bigger picture point about the direction of this country and the direction of, frankly, both of the parties. But to say that, oh, he's just unbecoming, and that's your strategy? You're going after him for re-election, which, of course, we understand, but you're doing it in the exact same way you went after him the first time when he won. And by the way, you're doing it with a strong economy behind him, assuming the strong economy stays as strong as it is. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So there was a big win last night as the Seattle
Seahawks
took on
the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, them. Yeah, I watched the game. It was a very good one. They ended up winning by a score of
21-7.
Which is a little bit of a misnomer, probably. Like, it doesn't characterize the defensive game from both sides last night. I mean, that score ended up happening in the fourth quarter. It was 3-0, but it was 3-0.
Nothing.
Up until
anything but nil.
The late third quarter, right? Third, fourth quarter.
Until the fourth quarter started. Yeah.
So it was a good game. There was some boneheaded moves by Russell Wilson, but I think he made up for it with some amazing plays. You had the linebacker.
Bobby Wagner.
Jumping over the line of
scrimmage.
To block Dan.
Bailey.
and his field goal attempt.
Dan Bailey with a 47-yard field goal attempt off the left hash mark. Out of the hold of Wiley, the punter. 12. It's blocked! It's blocked! Bobby Wagner gets through and blocks it!
I will say this. Bobby Wagner didn't get caught, but he cheated. I mean, it was clearly a penalty because you're not supposed to use any players, any bodies as leverage. And he used not just one, but two players as leverage. That's how he got
That's
over.
That's debatable.
No, it's not.
It is.
He violated. I listened to the people. Who's the name of the halftime show host, the female host?
Susie Colbert.
She's the worst.
Why?
She is just so bad. She sounds like and comes off as if I were the halftime host, meaning I don't know anything about football, and I'm surrounded by two people who would know something about football, and I'm not saying this is her. I'm saying this is how she comes off. She mispronounces names. She kept saying Sierra, by the way, instead of Ciara, who was performing at halftime, which, by the way...
Oh, so she doesn't know her sports.
She doesn't know. I'm saying, in addition to that, she just... I hate... She's so bad. This is the second time I've seen a halftime show with her, because the last time I watched Monday Night Football was with the Seahawks. She's just so bad.
I like her.
Well, that's because you're stupid.
Okay.
What's her name?
Susie Colbert.
Yeah, I don't like her. And then, by the way, the halftime performance was a tape performance of Ciara, who had a microphone on needlessly because she was lip syncing the entire thing, and it wasn't even matching up with the audio very well, like her lips moving in the audio.
I didn't watch it.
It's just so... Why do they do that? Anyway,
I had paused earlier in the game, so I was able to fast forward through halftime.
You made the right move. Cornerback.
What? Cornerback?
Corner.
Justin Coleman?
Yeah, him. He returns a fumble by Vikings QB Kirk
Cousins?
For a touchdown.
Second and 10. Cousins takes the shotgun snap. Being chased. Gets hit by Martin. The ball comes out. Rolling around. It's picked up by the Seahawks. Coming near side. It's Coleman. 20, 15, 10, 5.
And then they stopped it. Why didn't you give me the rest of the clip? Doesn't he score a touchdown?
Yeah.
Hold on. I'm going to reenact how Steve Rabel did it.
He is in. Justin Coleman is in. The Seahawks are blowing it open here in the fourth quarter. Touchdown, Seahawks!
Wasn't that a good impression?
That was you?
That was me. Wasn't that a good...
I even put the
applause in the background. So they won. It seems now likely that they're going to make the playoffs. Good for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very likely.
It seemed like at one point in the season when they started off 0-2, statistically, historically, meant that they were not going to. It seems like they're going to say, hey, take that, history.
And they were even 4-5.
Yeah.
Another 8-5.
They sucked for a while, but now they're starting to play well.
And now we have games against the Niners and Cardinals
coming
up.
They're hitting the stride just where they're supposed to. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Foodie Edition.
Cookie dough. Cookie dough. CDC says say no to cookie dough. Which, I never quite understood the idea of eating cookie dough. And I know we talk about it around the holidays because people are baking a lot more. And people will eat the cookie dough straight from the blender, whatever it is they're using to... What is the handheld blender?
Oh, yeah,
thing?
That thing.
Everyone knows what we're
Everyone
talking
has
about.
One.
Yeah, I don't have one because I don't bake.
We sold ours.
Yeah, you don't need to. So the CDC is saying, like, hey, Fatty McFatface, why don't you put down the cookie dough? Because, by the way, not only is it going to make you fatter than you already are, which is why you should go on a diet that's keto-based, like from our sponsors, Evolve180WeightLoss.com, but, hey, it's going to make you really, really sick. You see, there are uncooked eggs in the cookie dough that could be contaminated with salmonella. And we already see about a million cases every year of salmonella poisoning. It's not dangerous per se. It's unlikely to lead to anything super serious, except it's going to make you sick with the following symptoms. Please enjoy as I go over this as you're eating your breakfast. Cramps in your stomach. That's not that bad. Oh, bloody stools and diarrhea. Bloody.
Is this new to people?
It's just a reminder. Every year we got to do it.
Mom would never let me have cookie dough growing up.
Cold and chills, fever, headache. You'll feel sick to your stomach, obviously, and then you'll be puking up a storm. Maybe that's how people like mitigate the damage done by the cookie dough on your waist. Like, you know you're going to get sick. There's that funny joke. Yeah, there's that joke in the Devil Wears Prada where she goes, the assistant, I'm one stomach flew away from my goal weight. Maybe that's kind of what the whole idea is behind cookie dough. By the way, also in the cookie dough is uncooked flour, which isn't typically treated to kill E. coli. When you actually cook the flour, that's how the E. coli dies. And so that also means you're going to get hit with these symptoms, which are remarkably similar to the salmonella poisoning. Diarrhea, which may range from mild and watery to severe and bloody. Abdominal cramping, pain or tenderness, nausea and vomiting in some people. So hypothetically, if you give into this temptation to eat some of the raw cookie dough, you're going to know within the first 48 hours whether or not you came down with something, because that's usually how long it takes to show some of these symptoms of E. coli and salmonella. Salmonella actually can take 3 to 4 days, but E. coli, you're going to know pretty quickly. Oh, excuse me, opposite. Salmonella is 48 hours, 3 to 4 days is E. coli. We wouldn't want to mix that up. Because as you've got the bloody diarrhea and the puking nonstop, what you immediately want to know is whether or not it's salmonella or E. coli. Instead of just screaming to the doctor, please kill me, put me out of my misery, this is disgusting and I'm miserable.
Either way, between romaine, ground beef, and cookie dough, you're going to get one of those things.
You're going to get sick with something. So just lean into it and just make the most of it as you can. Just lean in. I had a salad the other day without romaine lettuce. I'll say this, way better without the romaine. Romaine is unnecessary.
Well, what type of salad
I like,
is it?
The crunch. I don't remember what it was.
You can't have a Caesar,
salad.
It was a
Caesar salad without romaine. It was
fantastic. No, you can't do that.
Yeah, you're wrong.
That's wrong.
You're wrong. I put Caesar dressing on everything. Buttery lettuce, the red leaf, loose leaf. That's so good. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho Live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Don't forget, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. I'm going to send you a link to an exclusive we have with Representative Matt Manweller, who is going to resign in the coming days. And he's taking issue with how the Seattle Times is treating him in the waning days of his political career. We're going to talk about it in about 10 minutes. You can get a head start on it by texting RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to the blog for you to read and, of course, to pass around. Van Jones, formerly of the Obama administration, is currently a talking head on CNN. He gave a speech that made a really interesting point. It kind of ignores the problems the Obama campaign caused for the DNC, but it highlights something Democrats understand, that they're not very good at data collecting for when they're running these national races. The Republicans actually know what it is we're doing. And they acknowledge that. And Van Jones acknowledges that. But now that they're acknowledging this problem they have, it could actually mean some trouble for Republicans in the next presidential cycle. So he's talking at the People's Summit in Chicago on Saturday. He had this to say.
Should we focus on racial justice? Should we focus on African Americans and Latinos and the rising majority? Or should we instead focus on the white working class? Should we focus on those industrial workers who've been left behind? This is the stupidest false choice that I have ever heard. It's stupid.
And but he's right. He's 100% right. The reason why they do that is because the Democratic Party is obsessed with identity politics. And they do it to the point where they end up alienating a whole bunch of people. I mean, think about specifically what Hillary Clinton did. She decided to openly alienate white, middle-class, working-class voters. She called them deplorable. She said they were racist. She implied that they were racist.
First of all, I don't mean to be rude.
Well.
And I don't mean to offend anybody.
Well.
But the people who ran the Hillary Clinton campaign did not spend their money on white workers, and they did not spend their money on people of color. They spent it on themselves. They spent it on themselves.
Who they spent
Let's
it on?
Let's be honest. They took
themselves.
$1 billion.
A billion. How much?
$1 billion.
No. How much?
$1 billion.
Oh,
and set it on fire and called it a campaign. That wasn't a campaign. That's not a campaign.
He's absolutely right. And the thing about the Hillary Clinton campaign, they weren't sharing data that they had with the DNC, not until they were sure that they can be trusted. And what Van Jones doesn't say here, and I think this is a key part of the story, is the Obama campaign, they were way worse in holding on to their data and not giving it to the DNC. The Obama team did a really good job with data. They understood what it was they were doing, but they didn't want to share it with the DNC or most any other campaigns. They used it really well to drive the vote for themselves, but then they didn't share it. And they left the DNC in tatters for Hillary Clinton. And Van Jones was part of the Obama team. Then you go to Hillary Rodham Clinton, and Van Jones is right. They wasted it on themselves while also not really helping the DNC. The RNC has been very good at this. Republicans nationally and locally have been really good at this. See what Caleb Heimlich is doing. He's the Washington State chairman, the pride of Puyallup. See what Susan Hutchison did before him. They were really good about data collection. And that's why they've been able sometimes to win important seats and mitigate some of the damage during the blue wave locally. And there was a blue wave locally. Now, at the same time, to address this issue, you've got Reid Hoffman getting involved. Who's Reid Hoffman? He's the co-founder of LinkedIn, a website I have but don't understand why I have it and sometimes feel compelled to update my profile even though I'm not looking for a job. It's one of those websites I just feel like we're supposed to have as professionals, but I never use it. He's building a data platform where he's sinking $35 million into the first year alone to find out how people vote, why they vote, collecting the data of voters, and then monetizing it. He wants to sell it to Democratic campaigns. Now, the DNC leaders, they hate this idea because they don't want it monetized, and they want to keep all of this data in their own hands, in the hands of party leadership. In fact, they call this an existential threat to the party. That they can get really good data and that, hey, you make us less valuable by monetizing this and privatizing this. And I think there's some truth to that. But I just wanted to point out the story in the sense of you had a whole bunch of people on the left, progressives, saying that we want less of this kind of government intrusion into our privacy. Privacy is really important. The right says this as well. But then you've got them so casually flaunting the idea of monetizing this personal debt. I thought that that was just an interesting side point to this. So bad news for the Democrats in that they seem like they're still in disarray over voter information. Good news for Democrats, bad news for Republicans is that they're starting to figure this out and starting to coalesce around some ideas, which is kind of also why I want to highlight this LinkedIn idea, because it's just going to put another wrench in their whole mechanism, their whole process. And that's actually kind of good for us, so long as they don't actually fix it. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Text RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-877. It's an Unbitter Tax Resolution Hotline. Man Weller takes on the Seattle Times. The FBI gets involved in Linwood. And tax hikes are about to hit Lake Washington School District. Time for the Big Local, brought to you by Tulalip Resort Casino.
Snoqualmie, Mercer Island, Des Moines.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rant Show.
Shoreline, Woodinville, Burien.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
The media is hyper-focused with the city of Seattle. We are not. Thanks to our friends over at Tulalip Resort Casino, they let me do something called the Big Local, where we focus on the communities you live in, and we completely ignore the city of Seattle. Let me tell you, it feels good when we ignore the city of Seattle. We start this morning in Ellensburg, where State Representative Matt Manweller is not happy with the Seattle Times, specifically an editorial asking him to immediately resign, as he said he would. And he ends up comparing the Times editorial board to a jilted prom queen. Matt Manweller was hit with a series of sexual misconduct allegations made against him. He's denied them, every single one of them. He's actually now involved in a lawsuit against his university for firing him. And he said, hey, look, if you reelect me, I'm going to step down. The reason he took that position was very simple. It's what's best for the Republican Party. He got hit with the latest series of controversies like 3 weeks before the election, so obviously it was too short of a time period to move aside, get someone else to run, put their name on the ballot, and wager a campaign. So instead he said, look, I want you to reelect me. It's important for us to keep control as much as we can. Vote for me. I will resign afterwards. And that ensures that the county leadership will appoint a Republican, and that's exactly what they're going to do. Now, he runs, he wins by 22 points. So he coasts to re-election, and he still has not yet said when he's going to resign. And so the editorial board has hit him with a rather you know, hard editorial saying, yeah, it's time to go. You owe it to the party. You owe it to your district to step aside. And so Manweller says, yeah, no, I've got plans. In fact, I outlined to county leadership what my plans were. I'm going to resign on or around December 20th, and that gives them plenty of time to find a replacement. They knew that this was what I was going to do. He gave us a statement exclusively, which you can read right now online at ktth.com, or text the keyword rants to 1-800-465-877. I'll send you a link to it. Now, in fairness to the Seattle Times and the tone they took in this piece, I do think it's appropriate to follow up with a politician who said he was going to resign and be like, oh, you said you were going to resign. When's that going to be? Like, I think that's an appropriate question. And I don't think Matt Manweller at the same time owes them anything. But they can ask the question. You can choose to ignore it. And that's actually what Matt Manweller did. He ignored the phone calls, he told me last night, because he doesn't owe the Seattle Times anything. And he's going to do this according to his terms, the way that he said he was going to do. He didn't like the editorial. And so he said, quote, because the Seattle Times cannot imagine a world where they're not the center of it, they were miffed by the fact that they had not been kept in the loop. So like a prom queen jilted on dance night, they used their hurt feelings to justify one more disingenuous hit piece masquerading as an editorial. So he's not happy. He's not happy at all. But he is going to be out on or around the 20th of this month, which I do think gives the people enough time to put in place a replacement for Manweller. If you want to read this exclusive story, you want to help me spread the word, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. That's RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Meanwhile, neo-Nazis attacked a black DJ at a Linwood bar, and now the FBI finds themselves involved. We talked about this yesterday. King 5 says the 8 suspects, 7 men and 1 woman. Can you be a... You don't shave your head as a woman Nazi, right? Or do you?
You can. I mean, you have the option.
I know, but is that a norm?
Yeah, they're very tolerant of things
like
that.
Okay, because the others, yeah. they were skinheads. I'm just wondering if it was the skinheads and the one lady with like luscious brown hair or something.
Yeah, if there's anything skinheads do is they allow you to choose.
Oh, okay, yeah, so they're pro-choice, the skinheads. Yes. Okay. King 5 says the 8 suspects are believed to be from Washington, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Illinois, and Oregon. This all happened early Saturday morning, I believe like 12:30 a.m. They came to the Rec Room Tavern and they started harassing this DJ before they ended up assaulting him. Now, the DJ is African American. It turns out skinheads don't like African Americans. That's not a shock to anybody, I hope. And so they started to hurl a whole bunch of insults at him after he refused to take their music select. You know, they made a musical request. What do you think was the genre of music? And I don't know why this is the genre of choice for skinheads.
You have to go with, like, some metal.
Heavy metal.
Yeah.
Why do you say heavy metal? Mostly because I think they're all white people who are involved in heavy metal. Not that they're white supremacists, but you can't be a white supremacist and be a fan of, like, hip-hop, right? You're like really,
right.
You're drastically cutting down the amount of music in that genre that you would be willing to listen to without hating yourself.
I think maybe like some Southern rock, like
maybe
some Skinner.
I my
like
sense
that.
Is
Allman heavy, Brothers Band.
My sense
I like
is heavy metal bands and country music. They're like, please don't listen to us, you disgusting bigots. Please just stay away from us. King 5 says the disc jockey says he was approached by a man who ordered him to play heavy metal music. The DJ instead took a smoke break. When he returned, he was assaulted and targeted with racial slurs. Jason Baum is the GM over at the Rec Room. He spoke to Cairo 7.
He's suffering as well, but both of us are trying to move beyond this and get back to work as soon as possible.
So now Snohomish County Sheriff's Office is partnering with the FBI to get a stronger sentencing against these losers because they committed hate crimes. Now, I'll take the same position on this as I usually take. Do you really think that hate crime additions to sentences are changing the bigoted ways of these people? Because we've had hate crime laws on the books for a while now, and yet they still committed this assault against the black DJ. So tell me again, why are we doing this? Why don't you just automatically make these crimes punishable by more years? So regardless of whether or not it was a racist who decided to assault this black DJ, or just some dude who didn't like the guy because he didn't play music but didn't have any racial animus towards them. Why not treat them exactly the same way? And whatever the punishment is now, just add on the amount of years you would add on if it was a hate crime. Because all this does is tell me that we are letting other people off easier when they've committed an assault. That's all this tells me. Because we know that these types of hate crime legislations don't actually work. Have you ever met a bigot who's like, well, you know what? I was about to commit this hate crime, but the truth is, they told me that if I did, they'd add 2 years to my thing. So now all of a sudden, I love Jews. I love black people and Latinos. Like, that just doesn't happen.
I have not met anybody.
But like you that. Haven't heard any stories
no.
be told of that? Like, I don't think they exist. So I'm just wondering if we need to have hate crime legislation versus just saying, hey, we're going to punish everybody with more time in prison. Because I think that might maybe lead to at least alleviating my feeling that we're letting other people off with less time than they deserve. Finally, voters in the Lake Washington School District are going to be asked to approve a tax levy in April. They would have to fork over $120 million collectively over the course of 6 years so that they can help expand some of the local schools because they're experiencing enrollment growth that they know is unsustainable under the current infrastructure. They've got more kids coming to the schools than they can accommodate. And so in order to pass this, they have to increase taxes via this levy to the tune of $2.60 per $1,000 of assessed value on your home or on your condo. The Lake Washington School District Superintendent, Dr. Jane Stavum, explains with nice little music in the background what the tax money would actually go to.
As part of meeting the needs of our growing population.
Do they have to pull, and plot down the music for this, do they have to pull like elevator music for all these things? You don't need music in the background at all. Just talk. Just talk into the camera.
Our board of directors has passed a resolution allowing our district to move forward with a levy for capital improvement projects this coming April of 2019. As part of that levy measure, we'll be looking to add critical spaces to accommodate student growth at a number of our schools.
You know, I was going to say no until I listened to the music. Now they got me in the mood to say yes. It's just so silly. The problem is they just approved a tax increase in 2016, but it didn't reach a supermajority, which is what you need to pass these types of levies. So, of course, they're trying again. The same way they're trying again, it seems like in Arlington, where we just talked about the same exact concept, which is voters said no, you refused to listen to them, so you're just trying again. There's no reason to believe that the second, third, fourth, fifth time that you guys try to get the same tax levy, anything's going to change. And so rather than push the same idea with a slightly smaller price tag, how about this? I know it's going to shock people, this suggestion, and I don't want to overstep my bounds because I'm just a talk show host. But how about you get a little bit innovative and try something else? Try something new to address this problem. I don't know what it is because I don't live in this district and I don't care about kids all that much, so I'm not going to come up with a great solution. But you know what? There are a lot of smart people in the Lake Washington School District who are going to be able to come up with some kind of an idea. Why don't we start going down that path rather than trying to push the same old idea over and over and over again, an idea that has not yet passed? That's for you guys in Arlington. That's for you guys in the Lake Washington School District. Like, come on, let's try something new, man. You're listening to the Jason Rant Show. Don't forget, text the keyword RANTS to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you my latest blog. I need your help promoting it. Text RANTS to 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. We are live in the Online Trading Academy studio. About 45 minutes from now at 8:30, we're going to have an exclusive interview with a Seattle police officer who's able to actually go on the record and speak out because he was fired after he punched a suspect who had just kicked him in the face, leading to actual injury. He was fired for his use of force. Only an arbitrator then looked into it and said, actually, you should not have been fired. He's been put back on the job. As a result, the judge, the federal judge overseeing the federal consent decree, looked at this and said, whoa, 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 whoa. Now I'm concerned about the contract you just passed. And it's possible he's going to get in the way of a contract being passed. So we're going to talk to this officer, Adley Shepard, in a very wide-ranging interview about his experiences being a cop and what he and his family have had to go through during all of this. It's going to happen at 8:30. Now, let's say you're not in the car when this very important and exclusive interview happens. You can stream it on the KTH smartphone app. In fact, if you text the keyword app to 1-800-465-8770, I'll send you a link so you can download it on your iPhone or your Android phone. Text APP to 1-800-465-8770, and we'll send you even an alert when the interview starts. So make sure you have that function turned on. You can get alerts for interesting interviews, exclusives, and, of course, breaking news. Gavin McInnes is the founder of the Proud Boys, and he's now the former host of a TV show on CRTV. CRTV and The Blaze just recently got together. They merged, and he's out as a result of this. He's been banned from YouTube, according to The Daily Beast. In fact, when you go to his YouTube page or one of his previously uploaded videos, you get a message that says basically the account was suspended for copyright infringement. So we don't know if he's going to officially be back or not. We just know that he's out as of right now. We do know his history. Gavin McInnes has been banned from Facebook and Twitter because of his association with what's being described as a hate group, an extremist group in the Proud Boys. I'm kind of on the fence on how I personally view the Proud Boys. I'm not a huge fan, if I'm being totally honest, of the language that they use. And they do give off some red flags. Do I think it's an extremist group? I don't know. I don't like some of what they say. It doesn't necessarily mean they're an extremist group, but whatever. That's not really what this is about. Because you can take a position that the Proud Boys is an innocent group that's just doing their due diligence and you've been fighting back against the creep of the left in their social justice warriorship. Or you can say they're an awful group that definitely spreads hate. And you will probably still have one particular opinion as it relates to this kind of censorship. And again, we're using censorship not in the sense of government enforced. We're using it in the sense of private companies choosing, and they have this right, to ban anyone they want from their platforms. I would prefer that sites like YouTube and Twitter and Facebook would err on the side of more speech rather than less. Because the best way to fight speech we don't like is to highlight it and then highlight the reactions to that speech. I don't need to silence someone I disagree with. I just need to debate them. I just need to convince others that I'm on the right side of an issue. And if we're willing to silence one side, understand they might, when they get in power, be willing to silence you right now. Imagine the power to censor in the hands of your worst enemy. Imagine the power to censor in the hands of your worst enemy. So I see what's going on social media platforms. In fact, right now, Google is talking in front of a House committee. We're going to have the highlights for it at the top of the hour and throughout the day. And they're likely going to be talking about this as well. But if you're not going to err on the side of more speech, okay, again, they get to do this. That is their right, and we as consumers can choose to stay with them. We as consumers get to fight back if we want or not say anything at all. You get to do that. Here's my problem. Why is it that only folks on the right seem to be dealing with this? If you're not going to err on the side of speech, why don't you err on the side of consistency? Because that's not what we're getting right now. We're not getting consistency coming from YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and all of these sites. What it seems like is that you're only going after the extremists, quote unquote, on the right, but none of the extremists on the left. Why is it that Louis Farrakhan, an anti-Semite, who literally on your platform 2 weeks ago called Jews termites, why is he still there? Why is that still allowed? Why is that speech that you're okay with on your platform and yet Gavin McInnes and all these others, Laura Loomer and whatnot, aren't? If you want to get rid of Laura Loomer and Gavin McInnes, okay, but you also should be getting rid of Louis Farrakhan, Linda Sarsour, another virulent anti-Semite. Why have you not done that? Why are they still there? That seems weird to me. And they don't really have an answer because they don't want to answer that. The truth is they're actively pursuing complaints against conservatives while ignoring those on the left. And it's weird that they're doing this on the topic of anti-Semitism because it is flourishing on sites like Twitter. I get hit with anti-Semitic stuff on a semi-regular basis. Look at Ben Shapiro's Twitter feed. He gets hit with it constantly. Speaking of anti-Semitism, by the way, police seized more than a dozen guns from a Monroe loser who made so many anti-Semitic threats that the FBI had to get involved. His name is Dakota Reed. The FBI says this kid was 20 years old. He had multiple fake Facebook pages where he would threaten Jewish people by saying things like, quote, gonna make the news some more and shoot some Jews in 2025.
It's very real. I think all synagogues around the country have beefed up security.
That's Rabbi Beryl Patil speaking with Cairo 7.
How could this happen here in Snohomish County? I've lived here for 6 years. I've never had an anti-Semitic incident. Never.
Now, officials believe that he was going to actually carry out a threat. And to answer the question as to why, whether or not, how can it happen here? It's because we allow hateful anti-Israeli comments and movements that are deeply anti-Semitic, like the BDS movement. We allow that to be treated with respect from the left, normalized by people on the left. We put on a whole bunch of events like the anti-Semitic documentary that the city of Seattle via Shama Sawant sponsored. And we don't push back enough. We normalize it. And when we normalize that kind of behavior, when we normalize the mistreatment of Jews, this is what happens. Anti-Semites feel empowered. When we let folks like Louis Farrakhan and Linda Sarsour from the women's movement on Twitter spout their anti-Semitism, it makes it normal. And it empowers losers like this kid, Dakota Reed from Monroe, to do what it is he does. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. It's the Jason Rance Show.